Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
We're happy to have with us on this Monday our friend Jimmy Himes from Sports Radio WNML in Knoxville after Tennessee's season opening loss in Charlotte against West Virginia on Saturday. Jimmy, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine, guys. How are you?
We're doing good. A lot to sort out from this game Saturday. They lost big, but do you feel like Jeremy Pruitt did really get a pretty realistic and good idea of where this team's weaknesses are?
Well, there's several glaring weaknesses. Obviously, the secondary, which is one reason I picked West Virginia to score 38 points. I did not think Tennessee's secondary could hold up to West Virginia's passing attack. Another concern I have is pass rush. I didn't see a lot of pressure on Greer. I don't know who Tennessee's pass rushers are. I thought I knew who they were, but they certainly didn't show up much on Saturday. So I think that's a concern. I thought Tennessee would run the football better. I didn't think the offensive line got off to a very good start. I think they got better, but that still is a concern. And so I think those are things that stand out to me about where Tennessee is. But look, this team. Now, there's a reason they were 0-8 in the SEC last year. Now, they're not ready to make that big jump like I know a lot of Tennessee fans had hoped for. And this team is going to struggle this year. Now, they won't struggle against three of their opponents this year. But after watching them against West Virginia, this is a team that's going to have to fight and claw to get to 6-6. I have more doubts about my 6-6 prediction now than I did before that West Virginia game.
The second quarter did give you some hope, and I thought Jarrett Garantano overall looked like he made a positive jump from last season to this year. What did you see?
Great. I thought that Garantano, when he was throwing the timing routes, I thought he really looked good. Whether it was a quick slant or whether it was a hitch, I thought those passes were really good. I thought that the Tim Jordan coming in at running back, I thought he was very impressive. I thought he made some nice runs after Ty Chandler went out with an apparent head injury. So I thought those were positives. I thought Callaway had a nice game with seven catches for, 75, 85 yards. So I thought he played well. It's kind of funny. I was doing one show, and I was pointing out all those positives on offense. And the guy called the show and says, well, then how come they only scored 14 points? Said, well, that's a fair point. But one of the reasons they only got 14 is they got down to the two-yard line. They couldn't convert. So they could have got to 21, but I did like Garantano, I like Callaway, I like Jordan. I thought those guys performed well.
Has there been any update on the injury to Ty Chandler, or do we find out anything today maybe?
I think we'll find out today, but I thought it was a head injury. I would be surprised if he's not into their concussion protocol because it was pretty evident to me that that's what occurred based on his reaction and based on the replay I saw of the guy. I think it might have been a knee that hit him in the helmet.
Well, Jimmy Himes of Sports Radio WNML in Knoxville. And I guess, Jimmy, for me, I guess first and foremost is, how much does the loss damage, I guess, the mental psyche? I'm always big on the psyche of an athlete, and a lot of people kind of poo-poo on that. But what do you think they are? Because if you don't have strong leadership as far as your leaders on the team, it could kind of go downhill real quickly. Can't forget these guys are – young men, and say, "Oh, here we go again."
Well, I think that's a good question, and I think that it's one reason I wasn't that optimistic about Tennessee beating West Virginia because I wasn't sure they could flip the switch from a year ago when they ended up on such a disastrous note. I mean, they were the worst team in Tennessee history based on their SEC performance. No team had ever gone 0-8 in conference play, and no team had ever lost 8 games in a season. Maybe some players came out of the game with a little more confidence, perhaps the three that I mentioned, Garantano, Jordan, and Callaway. But as a team overall, I think they've got to be wondering a little bit. Now, I think they did do a pretty good job of buying with Pruitt. Right. You only had three players that quit. Well, actually, two that quit. One got kicked off the team since he took over. So now you're going to play two teams that you should beat. So your confidence level, although it could be false a little bit, should rise a little bit when you play ETSU and UTEP. Then you got Florida. Florida's going to be the defining game for this team. It's also going to be the defining point for the psyche of this team. So I think that becomes even a bigger game given the fact Tennessee got whipped so badly by West Virginia.
I didn't see Todd Kelly Jr. out there. Did he make the trip, or is he just not healthy yet? I'm just interested. Not to say that that would have helped the secondary play better, but I was just interested to see everybody out there playing to see have opportunities against this high-potent passing offense.
He did not make the trip. He had a quad injury
that
had been unknown to us until Saturday.
Oh, wow. Man. Do you think there's any doubt that JG is the, and that's Garantano, by the way, is the starting quarterback, and Keller Chris is really a backup, and he'll get some playing time, but this is JG's team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I felt that way in August camp. Look, we didn't get to see much, but from conversation I had with people, it was pretty clear that Garantano was ahead of Chris. And so I think he even further distanced himself with the way he played against West Virginia. I thought he did a lot of good things. Mm-hmm. And now, that's not the greatest defense Tennessee will play, but still, I thought he did some good things. And in fact, if it were me, I'd have probably thrown more of those quick hitches or slants to the outside, because I thought West Virginia was giving Tennessee a pretty good cushion with the wide receivers. But no, I thought Garantano played well, and I don't think there's any doubt that he's Tennessee's quarterback.
Well, Jimmy, I know it didn't come on one player, but we were talking about the defense you were in and the pass rusher. You know, what was your evaluation of Kongbo's play? Naturally, it wasn't really good because he wasn't getting a lot of pressure, but did you see any hope or glimpse of hope that he could be a dominant pass rusher?
No, I did not. I didn't think he played well. I didn't think he showed up. They rarely called his name. My concern is that he just may not be a very good football player. He hadn't played much football before he got to Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And
hasn't played much since he got here. Sorry.
Stop that.
Jeez.
I can't argue that. I think he was an overrated prospect. I don't think he has a real good feel for the game of football. Mm-hmm. And, look, the light may come on at some point and he may emerge, but I thought that I would see something out of him against West Virginia, and I didn't see anything that makes me think he's going to become a good football player.
I think a lot of people, Jimmy, were won over by Pruitt's fourth down call early in the game when they threw to the tight end. And, you know, I kind of like that go for broke mentality.
Yeah, I like that. I thought it was, and there wasn't any hesitation about it. And I think a part of that, I think, had to do with, look, field goals aren't going to beat West Virginia, right? So you got to go for it here. You might as well roll the dice. What do you have to lose? I thought they made a nice play call. I know West Virginia had a bust there, but maybe Tennessee's formation or route or whatever they ran could have possibly created that bust. But I thought that was a good call. I thought it was the right thing to do at that point. I know some people said, oh, you got to get the points when you drive down there. I understand that point of it, but you also need to send a message to your team. And I think the players appreciated the confidence he showed in them. And then to execute that, I think, helped too. So, yeah, I think he won over a lot of people with that fourth down decision.
You surprised they only took two vertical shots down the field all game?
Yeah, I was. And I'm not sure what that says. Perhaps it says that West Virginia was giving them a cushion so you could hit the underneath pass. Perhaps it says they weren't that confident in their pass protection so that they didn't want to take shots downfield. That might have been a part of it. I don't know. Maybe they don't feel like they've got a real good deep threat. That could be the other part. But I did notice that they didn't take many shots downfield. And maybe they felt like Garantano's best passes are the short or underneath passes. That could have been a factor as well.
Other thing, too, he played a lot of freshmen. I think he knew that some guys were not ready for prime time, so to speak. But I think he felt like, playing the long game, looking down, through a whole season, these guys needed to get out there and understand what it's all about.
Yeah, I think that's true. Here's the thing that's the indictment on Tennessee, in my opinion. They must have 20 defensive backs, and you had to play three true freshmen in that game. You started two. What does that say about all those other defensive backs that have been in the program for one or two or 3 years? Of course, they did have the one injury that we talked about, and that was Todd Kelly Jr. But if you're Pruitt, I would have much rather thrown them in the fire against ETSU and UTEP rather than have to do it against probably the best passing team you're going to face all year. Nobody's better at the Tennessee faces if they're throwing the ball than West Virginia. And there may be one or two that could be as good. But, boy, to throw them in that situation, that was another reason. Because I had heard Tennessee was starting two freshmen in the backfield. I just thought it might be Taylor and Thompson instead of Taylor and Flowers. And when I heard that, I didn't give Tennessee much of a chance to stop West Virginia.
Not surprised, but it stood out, the missed tackles in the secondary and the chunk plays that they gave up.
Yeah, that and that's what West Virginia does to you, and that's another concern for Tennessee. I thought they would tackle a little bit better, in particular in the secondary. They've got a long way to go. Look, the defense was awful last year. It will be, I think it will be better this year, but I don't know how much better. That's the thing. We talked about here on our show about how Tennessee's pass defense was number three in the nation last year in yards allowed per game. Well, that was an incredibly misleading stat because Tennessee was giving up 250-something rushing yards a game, and opponents didn't have to throw the ball against them. Alabama didn't have to throw it. Georgia didn't have to throw it. Other teams didn't have to throw it. So we saw that secondary getting exposed, and I think other teams are going to be able to exploit that secondary too. Here's the problem, Mark. Tell me, and I had an argument with one of the VFLs the other day about this. Tell me what defensive backs Tennessee has that you say, that's a lockdown guy. He is really, really good in pass defense. Who is that guy? I don't know. Now,
exactly.
Could it be Alante Taylor? It could be, but not now. Could it be Flowers? Could it be Thompson? Maybe. But I would say it's none of them on the – and look, I think Nigel Warrior's a nice defensive back, but I don't think he's great at pass coverage. I think he can come up and knock your block off, and I think he can do some other nice things. But I don't think Tennessee has – there's nobody in that secondary I look at and say, boy, he's really, really good at pass defense.
Jimmy, as we talked about earlier, East Tennessee State will be a much different opponent. How do they go about kind of dividing up the playing time for the home opener this Saturday?
Well, I don't know. I guess they will – I don't know if there'll be any starting lineup changes. That's one question I have. Perhaps they will. I don't know because there were enough defensive errors, I thought, in that game where they might change it a little bit. I wonder if they'll shuffle the offensive line a little bit. The offensive line got off to a bad start. They played better later, but they got off to a really bad start before Tennessee made some adjustments along the way. I would think, though, that here's the thing. With a first-year coach and some of the young players, I don't know if you empty the bench early in a game like that. You may want to get Taylor and Flowers and Thompson and some of these other guys as many snaps as you can because they're so young. So you may have to have a pretty significant lead before you go to the bench. As far as and the same thing maybe with Garantano as he continues to learn this offense and so forth. So I think it may have to be a significant lead before Tennessee starts playing their backups because they still have so many young guys that they want to get some experience for.
Yeah, Jimmy, I guess first, I'm not a big guy on excuses, but what do you think about the lightning delay and then how then they came back? They just seemed like they were flat.
I thought that Jimmy Pruitt had a really good answer to that because he was asked the same thing. He says, well, he said, we had as much time to get ready for the second half as they did. He said, that's not an excuse. He said, we just didn't come out and play well. I tell you a big difference in what happened as far as the result. Blaine, if you look at third down conversions, first half versus second half, I think that's a pretty telling stat. Because in the first half, West Virginia was 0 for 3 on third down conversions. Tennessee was 5 of 10. In the second half, Tennessee did not convert a third down, and West Virginia was 5 of 6. Oh. I think that is a huge number as far as what happened in the first and second half. I know a lot of people going to look at the delay and say, well, maybe that took some starch out. They handle it different. I think Tennessee spent the entire delay coaching. West Virginia was eating pizza, drinking who knows what, and watching the Texas-Maryland game. So I think maybe there was a little bit of a different approach to that. But I don't know that I think that was going to happen anyway. I just think West Virginia was a better football team.
Right.
And that if Will Greer hadn't missed some passes in the first half, his numbers would have been better. He didn't miss them in the second half. So I don't put too much stock in that.
And talking about that conversion, essentially you say that because it made me think about why didn't they use the tight end a little bit more?
I don't know. I'm not sure why they didn't. Dominic Wood Anderson, caught the touchdown pass on the fourth down. He's a really good-looking player. I think one reason they didn't is because they felt like they could throw to the wide receivers with success, and they did.
Yeah.
I thought the hitches or the quick slants on the perimeter were open because West Virginia gave it to them. They were not playing much press coverage, I didn't think, at times, and Tennessee took advantage of that. And Tennessee only attempted, 25 passes in the whole game. So that might explain it, but I thought when they went to the passing game, they wanted to throw it to the wide receivers because for the most part, I thought they were getting a pretty good cushion.
And I had a couple huge UT fans, you know, talk about the huge loss there in North Carolina will hurt recruiting in North Carolina. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't know that it'll hurt her. Here's my thought on that. If you're a recruit, you'll look and say, here's another way to look at it. Man, I can play right there right away. They need help. And here's another way. They play three freshmen in the secondary. They're not afraid to play freshmen. And if I'm good enough, I can go over there and I can play or start right away at Tennessee. I don't know that a game like that hurts you that much. I tell you what would hurt you, though, if you went 4-8. If you match last year's 4-8, then you're going to have recruits say, oh, goodness, I thought Pruitt had this thing going in the right direction. I'm not so sure about that. So I think if Tennessee has a bad year, it could impact recruiting. I don't think one bad game will affect it.
Jimmy, it was good to see Shai Tuttle, you know, playing up to expectations. He had five tackles and a sack, and, you know, just good to see him healthy.
He's a good football player. He is their, well, I started to say the best defensive lineman. I'm not sure I'd go on one game because I think Kyle Phillips might end up having a good year. But he was Tennessee's best defensive lineman, I thought, in that game. I think he's a guy that can be a disruptor. I think if healthy, if he can have a healthy year, he's going to make his presence known. I think he's good enough to get drafted if he stays healthy. And he is not the one thing I wondered about with all the injuries he's had, is there a chance that he might end up not being the player that he had been? I like what I saw out of him. Mark, I thought that was one of the more encouraging signs for Tennessee was his play against West Virginia.
And Jimmy, you know, some good news leading into the game. J.J. Peterson got cleared. So what is his timetable for maybe getting some playing time?
When he got cleared, I thought he might be in the game in the second half.
They needed him.
Why not? He's got to go through an acclimation process at several days without pads. In fact, the way practice is structured, I don't even know if he'll be in pads this entire week. Is there a chance he could play some against ETSU? I don't know. I don't know if you want to throw him in there. Although, if you do get a 50-0 lead or 40-0 lead in the third quarter, there might be the temptation to put him in. First off, I don't know how good he is. I know how good he's supposed to be. But I also don't know how good Jonathan Kongo was supposed to be. So I'm sure the coaches want to get a look at him, see what kind of shape he's in. And I do think it'd be a little bit dangerous for his first day in pads to be a game. So I guess there's a chance he won't play against ETSU. But if he's what he's cracked up to be, I would bet you he'd play some against UTEP.
Jimmy, one more for me to wrap it up. Some impressive wins for the SEC on opening weekend. Bama against Louisville. LSU hammered Miami last night. Auburn beat Washington. Which one stood out to you?
LSU, because I picked Miami. I thought Alabama would drill Louisville because Louisville was talking about how they were going to dominate Alabama.
And I'm thinking,
you a fool. and then I thought Auburn would beat Washington in a low-scoring game. That one played out about how I thought. Miami and LSU surprised me. LSU ran the ball well. Burrow, not great numbers, but I thought he handled the position pretty good. I mean, they clocked Miami. They were up, 30-3 at one point?
Mm-hmm.
That surprised me. I thought that was impressive. I thought almost every team in the SEC had an impressive debut except for one. When you look at it, there were a lot of good performances by SEC teams. But the LSU game against Miami was the biggest surprise to me of all the SEC outcomes.
Thanks, as always. We'll talk to you Friday.
Okay, guys. Thank you.